Your work, Goldfields, opens in Clara M. Eagle Gallery tonight with your lecture from 5 to 6 p.m., and then there's a reception to 8 p.m. I'd like you to explain how you were drawn to this region northwest of Melbourne, Australia.
It goes back to 2009 when I went to a conference actually in Plymouth, UK, and the conference was called Framing Time and Place, Repeats and Returns in Photography. And it was a conference that brought together a lot of people working with photography and some video in relation to reef photography and thinking about time and memory. So what happened there was I met these really fantastic people that taught at La Trobe University in Bendigo, which is where I ended up going. And they just so happened to have an artist residency program there. And so I applied, and then I was invited to come be an artist in residence at the Visual Arts Center. And I knew quite a while in advance before I was going to go out there, so I had some time to research the region and kind of just became interested in it, knowing that I was going there. It wasn't a place that I would have necessarily sought out if I hadn't encountered these colleagues.
Bendigo is one of the towns that grew up in a gold rush similar to our own.
Exactly.
around the same time, and I read that it turned out that at that time, Australia started producing almost 40% of the world's gold. And now I gather the region is not actively mining, but is actively a tourism site.
Right, which is what's really interesting. People go and look at the photographs and the video works, and you'll see I photographed in these known former mining sites, but there's no real sense visually that they ever were these booming mining towns or these mining sites. They're kind of innocuous, just sort of ambiguous bushlands. So it's an interesting kind of history to know that these towns and the areas in the wilderness as well at one time looked very different than they do now.
And you summon up imagery. First off, Goldfields, the exhibit, is both a series of still photographs and video projections. And
right.
At your website, the video projections look like they might inspire a bit of vertigo.
Yeah, that's true. Part of my interest in combining the still and moving mediums is to have us think about perception in certain ways, or to have the experience of viewing the work. I mean, when you're placing the same image, projecting it side by side simultaneously, strange kind of optical things do start to happen. So, but I'm not primarily interested in just creating kind of an otherworldly experience for the viewer. What I'm really trying to use that for is to think about the relationship between the history of the spaces that I'm depicting and the relationships that we have with that kind of history in the present moment. So butting up these kinds of moving images next to still images kind of plays around with our understanding of the passage of time and how we experience it in the present and how we think about it in terms of spaces that are kind of loaded with history. I hope that makes sense. It's complicated the way that it's kind of hard to talk about it without being right in front of it, too.
Sure enough. I really understand that. The pictures, if I may just describe them, seem very spare, but very full of birds and bugs and big air. There's like a big air feeling in one of the videos I saw. Roaring kind of air. You say you came to understand this space as a repository of cultural memory constructed from the opposing perspectives of indigenous and colonial settler narratives, pastoral landscape representations, folklore, and myth. And some of the pictures, I mean, simplistically put, appear to summon up a sort of an elf-like possibility to me. I mean, I just started thinking about forest creatures. In addition to abandoned mine shafts that you say, mm-hmm. they mark those with crossed twigs, and that's all the warning you get?
Yeah, it was a really, I have to say, strange experience being in those spaces and kind of gathering material, which, you know, in the form of photographs and video, because I was by myself There's no one really around. Even though they're tourist sites of sorts, they're not, at least they weren't terribly populated while I was there. So all you're really hearing is the intense sort of sound of all the kind of Australian magpies and the different other sorts of animals, and you're hearing your footsteps crunching on the earth below. And then, yeah, I came to find out later from some colleagues that what I thought was some sort of shallow grave or something was how they capped some of the mine shafts, was just this really basic blanket of crisscrossed twigs. It's eerie, to say the least. And, you know, somewhat dangerous as well. But, you know, yeah, I'm glad that you brought up that sentence in one of the pieces of writing I do about this work, because I think that's what was so fascinating to me, was how all of these things came together, how, as I said, all of these opposing perspectives of what we bring to forest spaces when we're there or when we're looking at images of them.
One of your colleagues, the installation artist, is her name Lisa Zaher?
Lisa Zaher, she's a Chicago-based art historian.
She wrote that you managed to engender experience and representation at the same time. Tell me how you respond to that.
Well, I have to say I was really pleased to hear her say that and to write about that in the catalog essay for one of the installations of this work. That's kind of what I was trying to get at a little earlier. I'm really interested in what is it that happens with specifically photographic representation. We're so used to seeing photographs and moving image works, and we know that it looks, you know, like what was in front of the camera when you were there, but there is something inherently different about the experience and the representation. So what I was really hoping to get at with this work was to somehow have the viewer be able to sort of access both of those things or states simultaneously, or to be thinking about those things, not to just discount the fact that this is a representation and so easily just kind of think about it as being separate from that.
What drew you to wrap the whatever's, twigs or trees,
the stuff
with gold foil, it looked like?
As you can tell from the works, it's pretty haphazard and kind of clunky. I'm not an artist that spends a lot of time fabricating things. You know, I'm not a photographer that necessarily stages photographs, although I do, you know, kind of bring materials into the space and toy with the space. So in that way, I'm staging these sorts of clunky interventions, I guess. And what drew me to do that was when I first got to the residency, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do in the spaces. And in some instances, I just responded to the landscape the way that you would naturally with a camera, and just kind of documented or recorded what was there. But I had this thought that just occurred to me, well, I'm just going to gather gold stuff, gold glitter, paper, blankets, things, and bring them with me and see what that does, and see if I want to, you know, place it around the certain scenes, which I ended up doing. I would literally just kind of throw some stuff down or very clumsily wrap it around a tree and hold it on the other side with clothespins. So it was just kind of a strategy for me to respond to the space in a little bit differently, but in relation to the history of the space.
I really like the dialogue that you created with your artist friends about this. We were speaking before of sort of an intense academic intellectual approach to this exhibit versus just going to see this exhibit. It seems to add value to you and the exhibit to have had this done, this dialogue.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm pleased to hear that you enjoyed that as well. And, you know, as we had both acknowledged, it's tough. It's very dense stuff. And as I said, I choose to work with those two colleagues of mine very deliberately, and we've had an ongoing conversation over a couple of years now because they push me and they challenge me and they ask me difficult questions, and we have fantastic conversations around all of the reasons that we make work or do research. And I don't think that you have to have a full grasp or have read that to appreciate or enjoy the exhibition. But I think if you're interested in thinking about some of the questions that are posed there around representation and perception and different kind of philosophical entry points, then I think that it might be kind of a richer experience if people are willing to engage in that way too.
I should imagine your students would find real value in it.
I hope so. Teaching is tough in relation to some of this stuff as well, because you don't want to kind of scare people off, and you want students to want to really sink their teeth into things, but it's a interesting sort of dance to try and negotiate how you find out what students are particularly excited about, because not everyone is excited about the way that I approach my work specifically, but I'm convinced that every student, you know, is on the edge of their seat, super excited about some aspect of a deep kind of thinking around their work. So that's kind of what I try to bring to the classroom when I talk about my own work. What big questions do you guys want to think about with your work?
Dawn, thank you very much for speaking with me. I look forward to seeing the exhibit. I take it it has a very large feel to it.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the space also, I haven't seen it yet as it's been fully installed, so I'm excited to see how the curator and director, Colin, has decided to sort of situate the projections. It's a very heavy, big space, so I think it's going to work really well.